Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
This is the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Joy Taylor is joining me today on a Thursday. I woke up this morning, and it was a little cooler this morning. Just a little cooler this morning where I live. Little dew starting to form in the air. Do you feel that football now, Joy Taylor?
I feel the football, but LA definitely has different...
Depends on where you live in LA.
Different temperatures, yes. It felt like I was in the middle of the desert yesterday.
Okay. So it was hot where you live, but I live near the water by the beach. It's beachy, and I'm feeling it's football.
They play football in the heat, too.
Yeah, they do. You know, we hear a lot about all-time great, and there's very few all-time greats. We've talked about it in the NBA. As much as it's a star-driven league, there's been like six guys who have ever moved the TV ratings. There's a lot of good in sports. There's a lot of very good in sports. There's very little awful in sports. I mean, there's some Major League Baseball teams at the bottom right now, Baltimore, Miami, that are just brutal AAA baseball teams. But in the end, if you want to be an all-time talent, it doesn't matter where you went to college. It really doesn't. It doesn't matter to a large degree who your coaches were in high school, college. If you want to be an all-time great, the only thing you got to be is healthy. You can't name all-time greats that were hurt a lot. And when I hear about OBJ having another injury in camp, this is the safest the NFL's ever been. This is the least hitting on receivers they've ever been. Camps are lighter than they've ever been. You go talk to NFL players, you talk to NFL coaches, they just don't hit in camp. And OBJ's hurt again. Well, it's no big deal. 32 games he's been hurt in 16 of them. Last 32 games, he's missed 16 of them. He's not going to be an all-time great. He's an all-time great talent. But if you're asking me over the next 4 years, who's the Browns' number one receiver, it's going to be Jarvis Landry. This is comparing a sports car to an SUV. Sports cars are flashy. At peak performance, they're amazing. They're faster. They are wilder. But you can't trust them in the winter. They break down more. They're not as durable. Jarvis Landry is going to have more catches than OBJ this year. He's the SUV. Groceries, kids to soccer practice, use it year-round. Not as flashy, not as fun. It's dependable. The NFL is all about availability. That's why Carson Wentz is far more talented than Dak Prescott, but Dak may get more money. If Dak was getting injured and Carson was healthy, their salaries wouldn't even be close. Because their talent's not close. But Dak is available, and Carson isn't. And that's why people in Philadelphia, there's some fingers being crossed. Brett Favre, John Elway, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, every Sunday. Marcus Mariota, really talented. You don't know if he can get through a season. OBJ's hurt too much. Listen, Larry Fitzgerald didn't miss games. Randy Moss, Calvin Johnson, Jerry Rice played every game every year except one. Hines Ward, Tim Brown went 11 straight years, didn't miss a game. Michael Irvin got beat up a little, but in 7 of his 12 years, didn't miss a game. If you want to be an all-time great, you got to be available to play. Jarvis Landry, people forget this. When Jarvis Landry and OBJ were at LSU together, the last 2 years, you know, because Jarvis Landry didn't play much as a freshman at LSU. They had a bunch of good players. OBJ played earlier. But in the last 2 years of their careers at LSU, Jarvis Landry had more catches. He had more catches. And Jarvis Landry, the last 4 years in the NFL, has had more catches. Now, the sports car OBJ is spectacular in the one-hand catch in the Paris hotel room, and he gets talked about in the hair and the look and the shoes. I'm not denying that. Sports cars are a lot of fun. But sports cars are everybody's second car. You need the car that you can get your kids to practice, get the groceries, put the dogs in the back, go to the park. That's Jarvis Landry. So we talk about OBJ, and I think he'll never be an all-time great because he's just not going to be healthy enough. And by the way, he's a young OBJ. So athletes that get hurt early get hurt often. He's not going to get healthier. I mean, his body is what it is. His style is what it is. But I think in Cleveland, all this talk about OBJ, in 4 years, are you sure OBJ is going to be in Cleveland? I say it's a coin flip. I say it's 50-50. Jarvis Landry's going to be there catching 88 to 98 footballs, doesn't miss starts, doesn't miss games, totally dependable, just not nearly as flashy. OBJ hurt again. So we've been talking about this for like a month. Because basically after NBA free agency ends, I go right into football. And the big story has been, man, the Cowboys got a quarterback in Dak, a running back in Zeke, and a wide receiver in Amari. It's their triplets. And everybody's like, got to pay the triplets. Got to pay the triplets. And my takeaway is, in the NFL, outside of top quarterback talents, you don't got to pay anybody. And there are certain positions like running back, I'm going to rarely pay, you know, over $8 million a year. Zeke wants double that. Clarence Hill covers for the Fort Worth Press-Telegram. He covers the Cowboys. He says, the Cowboys have money, pay them all, and pay them all well.
The goal is to win the Super Bowl, not to balance the budget. So they shouldn't have to pick between one or the other. They have the money to pay them all. And Jerry's 76, he says, I don't have time to have a bad time. So they need to get those guys and pay those guys to win now. They've already paid Travis Frederick, Zach Martin, and they've already paid DeMarcus Lawrence. They're already under contract. They're in the fold. Tyron Smith is in the fold. We'll see on Jalen Smith. He has 2 years, you know, to sign him.
It's hard cap.
They got the money. They got $75 million in cap room next year, $25 million this year.
Okay, they've got the cap room, but let me ask you, are we overstating how talented the Cowboy triplets are? So let's just look at Dak, who you keep telling me, and I think we agree, is kind of a middle-of-the-pack guy. Zeke, terrific running back. And Amari, good but not transformational. He's a good receiver. I like him. So are they as good as the Saints triplets, Breeze, Alvin Kamara, and Michael Thomas? No. No, those guys are all Pro Bowlers. No. Are they as good as Matt Ryan, Devontae Freeman, and Julio Jones? Matt Ryan last year had 35 touchdowns and 7 picks. No. Okay, so he's a Pro Bowl quarterback, and Julio Jones is arguably the best receiver in the league. Now, Devontae Freeman's not as good as Zeke, and he is hurt, but when he's healthy, he's damn good. Are they as good as the Chargers' big three? No, because Phillip Rivers is better than Dak, and Keenan Allen is absolutely better than Amari Cooper, and Melvin Gordon is top three in the league. So they're not as good as the Chargers triplets. Are they as good as Brady, Sony Michel, and Julian Edelman? Well, Brady and Dak aren't close. I would take Edelman over Amari Cooper. Yes, I would. And Sony Michel is one of the top 2 to 3 best young running backs in the league. He's not Zeke, but I'd take New England's big three. Let's go to Cleveland's big three. Baker, Nick Chubb, and OBJ. Well, I think they're all more. I think Baker's a more natural quarterback talent than Dak. I think Nick Chubb's not Zeke, but he's close. And I think OBJ is better than Amari. Well, let's go to Green Bay's big three. Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Jones, and Devontae Adams. I don't think it's really close. I think Devontae's better than Amari. I think Aaron's better than Dak. And I think Aaron Jones is good. He's a top 12 running back talent in the league. So those are five or six. By the way, then you start getting into a bunch of triplets where I know two of three are better. The Rams, Jared Goff is better than Dak. Robert Woods, Amari, close. I'd probably give Woods by an inch. Gurley's not Zeke, but he's still going to be a 16-carry stud. Indianapolis, Andrew Luck, T.Y. Hilton are better than Dak and Amari Cooper. Houston, Deshaun Watson, DeAndre Hopkins, two of three, are better than Dak and Amari. Pittsburgh, Ben and Juju are better than Dak and Amari. Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill are better than Dak and Amari. So my point is, how good are the triplets? You want to back up the truck on this stuff. How good are they? They're not as good as Romo, DeMarco Murray, and Dez. They're not. Tony Romo threw 34, let's take the 2014 season. Romo threw 34 touchdown passes. Dak last year had 23. Tony Romo threw for at least 26 touchdown passes 7 times. Tony Romo's better than Dak. And then Dez had 16 touchdowns and 1,300 yards in that 2014 season. Amari's career touchdown average, it's 6. Now, DeMarco Murray's not as good as Zeke, but behind that offensive line, which was young and great, he did lead the league in rushing. So when you start talking about just pay the guys, how good are the three guys? How good are they? Dak is viewed as middle of the pack. Amari's a very good B receiver. You've got a superstar running back who's demanding a new deal 2 years out. Immaturity issues, judicial consequences every offseason. Before you load up the Brinks truck, just ask yourself, the Cowboys' previous triplets, Romo, DeMarco Murray, and Dez, were more talented with higher ceilings than the current triplets. And how did that do in the playoffs? Not great.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Obviously, Tom Brady's the best quarterback in the history of the league, the GOAT, right? We don't really argue it until LeBron James. We didn't really argue it with Michael Jordan much. We thought Magic was really good and Kareem was good, but MJ was the GOAT. And then LeBron came around, and it's like a talk show debate topic. Nobody made a big fuss when Tom Brady won his 5th Super Bowl and then all of a sudden his 6th Super Bowl, and everybody's like, okay, the Joe Montana stuff, it's over. He's just got more. But there is a decline for Tom Brady. Chris Collinsworth talked about it yesterday when he joined us, the former All-Pro wide receiver, the NBC Sunday Night Football analyst next to Al Michaels. He talked about his decline on our show yesterday.
I don't think you get to 40, whatever he is, 1.5, 42 years old, and you don't decline in some way. I mean, Tom Brady used to be able to throw a ball about as far as anybody in the league. So has he declined? Of course he has. I mean, he's not, you know, he's not that age. But if you're declining and winning Super Bowls, that's pretty good.
Listen, there's so much intellectual dishonesty on any debate in sports or in politics. Doesn't matter if it's guns, it's Trump. There's a lot of intellectual dishonesty by the media, by the public. I love Brady, but I would be intellectually dishonest if I didn't acknowledge one of the reasons Tom's very gradual slight decline is mostly hidden is because the division he's in. If you go look at the history of dynasties in this country, generally you need what I would call a local break. When Pete Carroll was dominating college football, the Pac-12 was atrocious. He had like 7 laydown games a year. He could rest starters. They were healthy at the end of years. You know, when Michael Jordan had his dynasty, the Celtics and the Pistons, he couldn't get through them for years. They got old. They could get to the finals every year. I mean, in the Eastern Conference, their rival was the Knicks, a roster of guys who would win a bar fight but couldn't shoot. So by the time he faced Utah and Phoenix, Seattle, really good teams, he'd had a local break. I've said this about LeBron in the Eastern Conference. I mean, you can take games off. You don't have to play as hard. These Western teams, they fall apart. The Warriors fell apart this year. Houston fell apart last year. Toronto's healthy as an ox. Why? Because the East is easier. You get a local break. Listen, Tom Brady is not only 30-3 against the Bills, 27-6 against the Jets, and 22-11 against the Dolphins. But I'll give you an example of the little breaks, and they don't last long, but the little breaks Tom is now getting because of the dysfunction in the AFC East. And these 2- and 3-week breaks, other teams don't get these. Go look at the Patriots' schedule. So week 2, 3, and 4, it's Miami, Jets, and Buffalo. 2 of those 3 have brand new staffs, and it's early in the season. So you're facing brand new coaching staffs that are just now implementing the system. All 3 of them have quarterbacks in their second year in the league. That's a real break. If I got Belichick, Brady, a system, a 70-year-old offensive line coach, and I bring back overwhelmingly my roster, that is what I would call a break in the NFL schedule. Because of dysfunction in the AFC East, they go into October at worst 3-1, and actually not really facing a veteran staff, a veteran quarterback, a veteran offensive line, a completely built, motivated, and rolling culture. Now, their schedule in the middle is like everybody else's, but let's go to the end of the Patriots season. Buffalo at home, Miami at home, which presumably gives them a bye into a home playoff game. Another three-week break. Buffalo, second-year quarterback. I like their coaching staff. They're rebuilding. They don't have a great, fluid, momentum-based offensive system. Then it's Miami. We don't even know who the quarterback is right now. So in the NFL season, everybody, what does every player do in the NFL season? They go to their schedule and look for the bye. It's rest. Now, I'm not insinuating playing Miami, Buffalo, and the Jets is rest. But there are two micro, what I would call respites in the schedule when the veteran Patriots will face young quarterbacks, young staffs, young position coaches, new cultures, dysfunctional organizations. Those are breaks. Those are real breaks. And it's those micro breaks, there's no question, and that dysfunction that has given Tom what I would call a local discount. And that is why his decline has been so granular, so hard to detect. Listen, if you put him in certain divisions in this NFL, I mean, right now you got Houston, Tennessee, the Colts, Jacksonville. There's Pro Bowlers on all those rosters. I mean, Tennessee, you look at and go, oh, Tennessee, they've been 9-7 three straight years. They've been best offensive line, arguably, in the league. So I do think Pete Carroll at USC, MJ at the end of his career winning titles, LeBron in the Eastern Conference. Let's be honest about Nick Saban in the SEC. LSU can't get the coach right. Auburn can't get the coach right. Tennessee can't get the coach right. And until now, Florida can't get the coach right. Dan Mullen finally got the coach right. It's a little bit of a local break for Nick. Then you put a bye here, Citadel a few times here, and you generally go into the playoffs a very healthy or healthier than who you play football team.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I think one of the funniest things about social media is that you get an urgent and exact response from fans. You know, it used to be years ago before talk radio, the only time the fans had a voice was a letter to the editor at a local newspaper. Then sports talk radio has developed and, you know, you get people calling in and they're very emotional. Social media has just enhance that, where people freak out when you suggest a good team last year won't be as good, or a team last year that was average will be better. That is outrageous to predict, even though we know it happens every year. One of the things I'm proudest of is my blazing five picks. I've hit almost 60%. Professional sports bettors get about 57%. We're on that number. We work hard at blazing five. I love it. I also like my ability to go and say these two teams that were good won't be. These two teams that were bad will be good. We're pretty good on that. Last few years, we're like 6-6 or 4-4 around there. So in the last 30 years, four teams that didn't make the playoffs will make the playoffs in the NFL. So you look at the playoff teams, and they all look good and Chiefs, Patriots, Texans, Chargers, Colts, Eagles, Seahawks, Cowboys, Bears, Rams, Saints. You know, you'll be outraged if I told you four of those wouldn't make it and four new ones are in. So I'm not going to tell you who's not going to make it. We'll be optimistic today. I'll just tell you who I think is going to make the playoffs. Number one, the Pittsburgh Steelers. They were 9-6-1 last year with massive turmoil. They were a good football team last year. Now they've added Devin Bush, who looks like about the best draft pick. They got the AB drama out the door. By the way, Ben threw 10 of his 16 interceptions when targeting Antonio Brown, meaning he had to feed him constantly or AB struggled emotionally. They have the best offensive line, according to Pro Football Focus. They were good last year. It looks like, from what I've seen so far in the preseason, James Washington will fill in nicely. It's also an organization that's always done a great job replacing skill people. I think they make the playoffs. Let's go to the NFC. The Packers last year were not a terrible team when Aaron Rodgers played. He just missed a lot of games. I think Green Bay wins the division. First of all, Aaron last year was 25 touchdowns, 2 picks. And that was not a full season. So, you know, extrapolate that out to 36 touchdowns and 5 picks. Aaron's still elite. Number two, they made defense a priority the last 2 years in the draft in free agency. They've added really good linebackers, Preston Smith, Za'Darius Smith. They went to their secondary. They've drafted corners and acquired safeties the last couple of years. I also like about Green Bay is I do think they have a new energy and a new young coach. It puts Aaron in a better place, a little more dynamic practices. Anytime there's a new boss or a new coach, everybody's a little bit more in line. The apathy leaves the building. I think Green Bay makes the playoffs. I also think Minnesota will be a playoff team this year. Again, they were 8-7-1, and that's firing your offensive coordinator before the year was over. They had coaching chaos. I think Minnesota's a really good football team. Kirk Cousins now in his second year. He completed 70% of his throws. I still believe they have the best wide receiver tight end group in the NFL between Diggs, between Thielen, and between Kyle Rudolph. Dalvin Cook is a remarkable talent. He's missed 17 games the last 2 years. He's finally healthy. They also addressed their offensive line. That's their weakness. They drafted Garrett Bradbury, who I think was the best center in the college draft. So I think they addressed their weakness. They added to a strength. I think they have an excellent staff. And now Kirk Cousins, who has struggled in big games, has an offensive coordinator that I presume will last the year. And finally, I think the Atlanta Falcons get in. Listen, last year, both starting safeties suffered season-ending injuries in September. Their Pro Bowl linebacker, Deion Jones, missed 10 games. They addressed offensive line in the draft. That was a weakness. They've replaced Steve Sarkisian with Dirk Cutter, offensive coordinator. Many in-house see that as an upgrade. You forget how good Matt Ryan was last year, 35 touchdowns, 7 picks. And I, frankly, as I've said, I think New Orleans takes an emotional step back. Drew Brees getting older. So I see Atlanta as a team. And again, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, and Atlanta. Atlanta last year was 7-9. These were quality teams. Atlanta suffered injuries. Pittsburgh suffered drama. And Minnesota had coaching chaos. Plus, Aaron Rodgers got hurt. So I think the Steelers, the Falcons, the Vikings, and the Packers are the four new teams that make the playoffs this upcoming season.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
All right, without further ado, a guy I rely on in Thursdays in this time slot from now, we started 2-3 weeks ago, until February. Let's go to Greg Cosell, NFL Films 30 years. So what we've been doing in the preseason, Greg, we've been taking two divisions. Today we'll take the NFC North and the AFC North. So let's start, Greg, with the NFC North, where Aaron Rodgers played a lot of games but never felt healthy for the first 4 to 6 weeks. I didn't think he looked healthy at the end of the year. You know, our takeaway is Matt LaFleur's system, Aaron Rodgers' talent. How do you think it works?
It'll be interesting, okay, because Matt LaFleur's system, you have to remember where Matt LaFleur came from, Colin. His background is Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay. It's a system where the quarterback's predominantly under center. It's focused on this play-action pass game. It's very defined, and Aaron Rodgers has not been that kind of quarterback. Now, he's certainly capable of that, you know, but he's not been that kind of player. You know, a friend of mine actually posted something on Twitter I thought was interesting. Let's say a play is called and the design of the play works perfectly and Aaron Rodgers does not throw the ball and it's 3rd and 5 and then he runs for 6 yards. Is that a good play by Aaron Rodgers or a bad play by Aaron Rodgers? You know, and that's what you get a lot with Aaron Rodgers. The design of the play works. The route is open. He doesn't turn it loose within structure and then make something happen. And that's going to be very interesting when you think about Aaron Rodgers in a Matt LaFleur offense.
The Chicago Bears have lots of things I like. Matt Nagy, the coach, excellent defensive personnel. I think Ryan Pace is an emerging top general manager. But you're as good when it comes to January as your quarterback and the ability to protect your quarterback. When you look at the Bears, Mitch Trubisky and Matt Nagy, I thought Nagy looked frustrated with Trubisky in the playoff game, a limited thrower of the football. Where do you fall on the Bears and Trubisky specifically?
Well, I think if you just look at Trubisky and isolate him, he's not a truly natural thrower. He's got a little bit of a hitch in his delivery. His arm slot's a little low. He tends to lift his plant foot off the ground before he releases the ball. What that does is it locks your front leg, and that impacts negatively both your velocity and your ball placement. So he's not a natural, easy thrower of the football. So now you get into how you can help him. Their offense is very multiple from a formation and personnel standpoint. It's very diverse. They have a player like Tariq Cohen who can use in multiple ways. They move him all around. Nagy did a really good job on third down with his route concepts and his combinations. He helped Trubisky a lot. I think when all's said and done, that's what you have to do with Mitchell Trubisky. And then you get into the debate about can you do that in the playoffs against better defenses and teams that study you in greater detail than perhaps is done in the regular season. I don't think we know the answer to that, but Mitchell Trubisky will not all of a sudden become a smooth, easy thrower.
Let's move to Minnesota. One of the reasons I think the Bears pull back is I think Green Bay will be better defensively. And frankly, my eyes tell me Minnesota is still a well-coached, excellent roster with explosive, dynamic offensive pieces on the perimeter. Kirk Cousins, he is a competent 70% completion guy. I like Minnesota. I like their roster. I don't break down film, but when I watch them, I think they're fairly complete with a slightly below average O-line. What say you?
Yeah, I think ultimately what they're going to try to do now with the change in offensive thinking is they're going to try to be a run-first team, the stretch run action, have Dalvin Cook be the number one focus of their offense in the foundation, and have Cousins work off that. And ultimately, that's what Kirk Cousins is. I mean, think back to, because Gary Kubiak is there now, think back to Houston with Matt Schaub. Matt Schaub put up 4,000-plus yard seasons, three or four of them, had some really good years in Houston. They ran the play-action game. He was very efficient, very effective. I think ultimately that's what Kirk Cousins is, and I think that's the way they'll structure their offense.
What do I do with Detroit and Matt Stafford? Stafford mechanically sometimes is hit and miss. He's a huge arm talent, but this organization, Greg, never feels like it can gain momentum. Sometimes in the division, can't get out of its own way. Doesn't ever feel like they can. They never feel like. I just keep waiting for the 7-game winning streak. I keep waiting for momentum. What does the tape say on this team and this roster?
Well, I think what Matt Patricia is trying to do is to change the focus. I think for years this team was built around Matthew Stafford, and the idea that he's going to be the reason we win or lose every week. And he's a tremendous arm talent. He's very smart. But it's very hard to play that way in the league on a week-to-week basis. There's really only a few guys who you can do that with. And in an ideal world, you don't really want to build your whole team that way. So I think what Matt Patricia is trying to do is take the focus off of Matthew Stafford as the guy that we're dependent on. So they've built a really strong D-line. They're going to try to be much better on defense. I think they're going to try to feature the run game more with Kerryon Johnson. And I think they're not that they're going to make Stafford a system puzzle piece, but I think that they want him to be more of a part of a team as opposed to the entire team. And Stafford is a very, very talented guy. And by the way, he has not missed a game. And, you know, remember when he was viewed as fragile? I don't think he's missed a game in 7-8 years.
Yeah. Let's go to the AFC North. We start with Baltimore. What concerns me is this, is that I kind of feel like they're going to be contrarian to the league. Very collegiate, but they have lost some top defensive personnel. I don't think they're built for shootouts. What do you make of how they're trending and what they're trying to do with their offense?
Well, they're not going to try to play in shootouts. They're going to run the ball. My guess is their offense will look very similar to what Greg Roman, who's now their offensive coordinator, did when he was with Colin Kaepernick for those couple of years in San Francisco, including the Super Bowl year. They'll be very diverse with their run game, which will include the quarterback. They'll be judicious in how they throw it. They'll try to create big plays off run looks with run personnel. And they'll try to control the pace and tempo of the game so that their they shorten the game by using clock, and that their defense won't play as many snaps. That's going to be their approach. And obviously, when for a couple of years there in San Francisco, it worked extremely well, and I think they're going to try to replicate that and hope that Lamar Jackson continues to improve through this process as a passer.
So last year they missed the playoffs, but Pittsburgh was 9-6-1. Their offensive lines got road graders. They always seem to find the next great wide receiver target. Devin Bush looked good in the preseason. They do get to the quarterback. Don't love their corners, but there are very few cornerback units I love. I have Pittsburgh winning the division. I think AB's drama. 10 of Big Ben's 16 picks were thrown to AB. I think he's the kind of guy you got to feed, especially early in games.
And they did,
and sometimes force. I like Pittsburgh. When I watch them play, physicality up front, I like them. I have them winning the division.
Yeah, the guy who stood out to me, and I know it's one game, but I look at movement more than anything, not the number of catches in the preseason. I thought James Washington looked a lot quicker and more explosive than he did a year ago, and even at Oklahoma State. And I think he's an interesting player to watch because we know what Juju Smith-Schuster is. He's a really good player. I think you can line him up inside. You can line him up outside. You can move him throughout the formation, and he's a quality NFL receiver. You know, I think they need that second guy, and I thought James Washington in the preseason game, you know, he looked to me like a guy who worked out in the offseason, you know what I mean, Colin?
Yeah.
Like he worked out, probably ate better, and he looked more explosive, and I think he's critical to what they do this year.
All right, go to Cleveland. We know the things they're good at. They have very good defensive line personnel, excellent perimeter players. Baker's obviously talented, some dynamic stuff in the backfield. Here's my question. That offensive line, it doesn't look great on tape. Safety back end. Do you see, personnel-wise, we know what they're going to be good at. Is there any part of this team up front, offensive line, you don't like? What concerns you with them?
I mean, they're certainly young, but, I mean, O-line, I think, is somewhat of a question. Okay, right now it appears Greg Robinson, who's been around the league quite a bit, a former number two pick, is going to be their left tackle. Their probably most consistent O-lineman will be the left guard Joel Bitonio, but I think the rest of the O-line is a little bit of a question mark at this point in time. We'll see how that plays out. Look, we know that Baker Mayfield can certainly move if need be, but I don't think he's really that kind of quarterback overall. He's a very efficient kind of player, very compact. They've got really good weapons. So it's a team with a ton of weapons, and I think a quarterback who can at times compensate and camouflage offensive line weakness as the offensive line develops, you know, through it being a work in progress.
You like their defensive personnel?
They've got a lot of really good players. I mean, Myles Garrett could be a star. Look at their D-line.
Yeah.
It's Myles Garrett, Sheldon Richardson, Olivier Vernon, even Ogunjobi is a good player. You know, I think that they're solid. Look, they're going to play Denzel Ward, who's a really solid corner. We'll see if Greedy Williams ends up starting. So they will have two young corners who can line up and play man coverage and can play press man, which is what you want in this league. Whether they're ready to do that week in and week out at a high level, only time will tell. But they have the prototype for what you want at the corner position in today's NFL.
Cincinnati feels like they're destined to be fourth in this division. Like, it's one of the only guarantees I feel like in this league. I watched them in the preseason. I don't see it. I don't see the dynamic quarterback. I don't know. I kind of feel like they're in a rut.
We'll see. I mean, look, they hired Zach Taylor, who came from Sean McVay. So you're going to get a lot of that offensive look. Now, you could say what you want. Jared Goff under Sean McVay, very efficient player. It was a system-based. Goff was somewhat programmed. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not a negative term. I think Andy Dalton can fall into that category. You know, Dalton's taken a bad rap. You know, there were a number of years ago before he got hurt, he may have been the league MVP. I think he fits this kind of approach. I think Joe Mixon certainly fits this run game,
yes.
This stretch run game.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if Mixon Mixon became a big, big-time player in the context of this offense.
Yeah, no, I mean, Mixon is a big-time player. That I misspoke. He is a very dynamic power running back. Again,
and a very good receiver, by the way. You saw what you watch a ton of college football. You know what they did with him at Oklahoma.
Yeah.
I mean, he lined up all over the formation. He's a terrific receiver, and Zach Taylor will use him that way.
Greg Cosell, NFL Films. Great talking to you.
Thanks, Colin.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So this morning, the season's 3 weeks away, Joey. And so this morning, the staff came in, and they were throwing around. We were just kind of preparing for stuff and our show about an hour in. And the staff's like, you know, they were throwing me scenarios out for the NFL season. You know, would I rather see this or would I rather see that? And a lot of times, I think the audience believes I want to be right. I don't get paid to be right. If I was right all the time, the show would be boring. Sometimes I'm catastrophically wrong. It's whack-a-mole. You come and, you know, beat me up for it. And that's not a terrible thing. I don't have any insecurity based on I missed on a pick. What I am worried about is I'm boring and not interesting. So I root for interesting. So the staff created a game today. It's called a Would You Rather, and they're going to give me options on things in the NFL and how I would rather they turn out. So you ready to go, John? Joy, whoever's doing this?
Yes,
Joy, you're
ready.
Doing it. All right, here
All
we
right.
go.
Would you rather the Browns go 12-4 or 4-12 this season?
This feels like it needs music, John. Yeah. I would rather they go 12-4. Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is, if they go 4-12, that means they start the season probably 1-5. They're no longer, we're not talking about them. I want to talk about Baker Mayfield and OBJ. You and I love topics like this. People think I don't like Baker. Why do you think I talk about him? He's interesting. He's captivating. The Browns going 4-12, by week 5, I'd be right. By the way, I wouldn't be right, because I'm not predicting they go 4-12.
Right.
I'm predicting they battle for a playoff spot at 9-7. There's no value them going 4-12 for me.
Yeah, you'd be wrong, and you'd be not interesting. It would not be interesting.
Yeah, so I'd rather be closer to right and interesting than 4-12, and by week 7, we're done talking about
them. I don't want them to go 4-12 either, although I will be relentless to Browns fans on Twitter if they do. Would you rather see Aaron Rodgers win MVP or Matt LaFleur get fired?
Selfishly, I'd rather Aaron win MVP, which I predict he's going to have an MVP-level season because I work for Fox. Fox has the NFC, and when the Packers are good, it is great for our business. Outside of the Dallas Cowboys, Green Bay and Pittsburgh are the biggest brands in the NFL. Let's be honest. When Aaron's really playing well, he's great television. Period. I like good television. Aaron hobbling around in third behind the Bears and Vikings. Do you really think I want Trubisky to win the division? That's what I want in my playoff game on Fox.
Spoiler alert, we want every quarterback to be good. It's better that way. Speaking of quarterbacks, would you rather the Cowboys pay Dak $40 million a year or see Dak leave in free agency?
I'd rather see Dak leave in free agency because I think it would be fascinating to see who bids on him. Listen, player mobility in the NBA is really interesting. I mean, you could argue it's way more interesting than the regular season.
Yeah.
So if Dak was available, he'd be a free agent. I mean, he'd be out there for bidding. Wouldn't that be a little bit what we love about the NBA? Quarterbacks are almost never on the market. Peyton Manning was on the market for an hour. Kirk Cousins was. To have a Dallas Cowboy quarterback who's won playoff games on the market would be incredible. If he signs for $40 million, we know the end result. They can't pay for everybody.
Right.
And they're just kind of good, not special. So if he hit the market, I'd love it.
It would be one of the craziest bidding wars in NFL history.
Well, there's no question that he's...
Because very rarely do quarterbacks hit the market
to
begin with.
They just don't.
Right. So would you rather see or rather have Tom Brady retire after the season or see him play for another team?
Oh, I'd rather...
After this season...
I'd rather see him retire. I never want to see Tom Brady in a Cincinnati Bengal uniform. I just can't. I can't do it.
It's
just
so bad.
I can't see Derek Jeter wearing an Oakland A's uniform or Kobe Bryant wearing a Charlotte Hornets uniform. Listen, man, you know I love Brady, but one more great year and then that's it. I think he'd regret it 10 years later. He'd see that picture in a Bengal uniform and you'd be like, oh, or a Dolphin uniform. You'd be like, oh,
so for that.
That's
so not, here for that one.
Yeah, okay.
Would you rather have Cam Newton lead the Panthers to the playoffs or this be Cam's last season in Carolina?
I'd rather it be Cam's last season because I'm tired of having this argument that everybody in Carolina thinks he's great and the rest of us right-minded people saying he's talented but wildly inconsistent. I feel like I've done this topic too many times. Cam's not great. He's super talented. But you can't have a career without back-to-back winning seasons when you've been surrounded by Pro Bowl offensive linemen, Greg Olsen, good backs, a good coach, stability, good defenses, good defensive line, Josh Norman. I'm tired of arguing how great he is. I'd rather it's over. He plays, it's done, they move off him. By the way, if he hit the open market, that would be interesting. If Cam hit the open market, Cam can sell tickets. You can't tell me Cam in the open market wouldn't be more interesting than a 9-7 Carolina team going to Philadelphia to open the playoffs and get smoked.
Yeah, that would be. Right. Would you rather see Kyler Murray win Rookie of the Year or see the Cardinals draft a quarterback in the first round for the third straight year?
Oh, that's an easy one. We want to see him be great. That's the easiest one yet. Yeah, I want him to be great. Listen, you and I always say this. We're rooting for all the college quarterbacks to come in and be good. Cleveland went from unwatchable to must-see TV.
Right.
The Jets this year will be really interesting. And if Arizona hits,
I'd rather everyone be competitive and let's see who the best of the best is.
Yeah, bad quarterback.
Rather than have duds.
Bad quarterback play hurts my eyes.
Yes.